This show is a proud member of the Nerdy Legion Podcast Network. Get more at nerdylegion.com. Enjoy the show.
This is the Aftershock Central Podcast, episode 23. I lied last week, Ronnie. I said I was going to do a solo episode on Captain Kidd. Guess what didn't happen this week? A solo episode on Captain Kidd.
Shameful.
I'm still going to do it, just I haven't had time.
Guess what else hasn't? What? I Am Gotham got rebooted and hasn't came back since.
Oh, that's coming out this weekend.
Oh.
Yeah. It'll be out Saturday. Quit trying to rush me, bro. It was funny. Sparkman sent me a message. He's like, if you want, I'll edit them. I was like, no, I'm going to edit them. So I did. I edited three already, so at least I know that I won't have to worry about new episodes for a couple weeks.
Right.
Anyways, we're not here to talk other podcasts. We're here to talk this podcast, the Aftershock Podcast. We have some good books to talk about this week, Ronnie.
We do.
We should mention, first of all, that our partner in crime, Jack, is not here. He has decided that he's joining Hydra. Mm-hmm. Over in the Secret Empire.
Yeah.
So
he's
yeah.
He's rough riding it. Good old gentleman Jack.
He sure is. Man, you're so good at segues, because the first book we're talking about tonight, Ronnie, is Rough Riders, Riders on the Storm, number 3.
That's right.
It's who is this? Adam Glass, Patrick O'Leaf, Gabe Alteb, Sal Cipriano. That's the creative team. And I don't even know how to recap this book. Let's see. McKinley gets killed by the bird face people.
Yep.
Roosevelt comes up an old acquaintance who's a total douchebag.
Yes.
And the bird people, they handle the Rough Riders pretty well, Ronnie. I don't know.
I know.
There's some stuff happening here. God, I don't even know where to start with this book, man. I know where to start.
All right.
It kicked off really good for me. Really, really strong. Roosevelt is like the Batman of Aftershock Comics, let me tell you.
I knew you had to work that in somewhere.
It started off really strong. And the reason I said there were a couple scenes in here that just made me laugh out loud.
Yeah.
When Roosevelt is with Monk Eastman in that carriage, and they have McKinley's murderer in there, and they get attacked by the bird face people, bird masks. They all jump on the carriage and start shooting at it. And Monk's like, aren't you worried that we're going to get killed? And Roosevelt's like, nah, the glass is bulletproof. And they show the bird face guy shooting the carriage, and the bullet ricochets off the back glass and just blows his head wide open.
Yep.
I know that's not funny when people get killed, but that scene was just hilarious. And then and Roosevelt's like, Monk's like, how do you get all these gadgets? And Roosevelt's like, I'm rich.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh my God, this is amazing.
And like, it was almost like they were going to do good cop, bad cop, yes. But then they just went bad cop, bad cop.
Bad cop, bad cop. it was so funny. And then what's the carriage driver's name? I can't remember. But Monk's like, we need to hurry up and get going. And Roosevelt calls the driver to help him fight these bird people. Mm-hmm. And it's like a robot, like a legit. Yeah. Like 1920s robot driving the carriage. I gotta tell you, man, I don't even know what to say about this book.
It's
hilarious.
It's hilarious, like that part, but it's also deeply intriguing part.
Yeah.
Like well, we know that we talked about it last time, I think, like that the Klan that wears the bird mask, right? That was symbol and like pulled out of history or whatever.
Yep.
But I also wonder, like, the newspaper guy that
William
Roosevelt
Hearst.
Was Yeah,
Yep.
if like he was a real person or whatnot.
Yeah, he was a real person.
Well, right, but I meant like to the smut writer that he was portraying type thing, you know?
Yeah, if I remember correctly, I think Hearst wrote the first fake news story.
Okay, so yes, then.
I think that's how originally he made all his money. He launched his newspaper, and they were just putting out fake news, and people were buying the hell out of it because, fake news
Sorry.
sells. And yeah, he built this whole newspaper empire
Okay.
based on that.
So he was the National Enquirer before it was National Enquirer.
Yeah, kind of. But I mean, it was a legit newspaper. Like, they had real news.
Right.
But they would embellish some news just to sell more papers.
Right.
Yeah, the Hearst is he's an interesting character, and he's a total douchebag in this issue. He kind of takes credit for Roosevelt, being as famous as he is and getting elected in New York, becoming governor and vice president and all that. And it's kind of funny too, because that whole scene happens after McKinley gets killed. And Hearst is there for some reason. I guess, not for some reason. I mean, the president's on his deathbed.
Right.
But him and Roosevelt go at it. And Roosevelt's like, well, you shouldn't talk to the president like that. And he's like, listen, you're not the president. You're still the vice president. You haven't taken your oath. Like, I'll do what I want.
Right.
And that's really interesting, Because, like, yeah, granted, he's not president. But I mean, he's still the second most powerful person in the country.
Right. He still has the balls to talk to him like that.
Yeah, it's crazy. So I'm curious though if there's more to their relationship than we have just in this issue.
Right.
Maybe Hearst has something on Roosevelt that we're not made aware of yet,
Right.
and that's why he can talk to him that way.
Yep.
That's the only thing that I can think of that would make sense. But yeah, so that was pretty interesting. Of course, Houdini and Jack Johnson are doing their buddy thing, as always.
Yep. And their
And
interaction's always great.
yeah, their interaction's always great. Annie and Thomas Edison are together, trying to do some research at a church, and the bird people show up.
Which it's kind of awesome that Adam wrote them that way, because Edison's like a science guy,
Right.
not a real religious guy, right?
Yes.
And he just revived her, and so now they're going to the church, you know?
Right.
So it's kind of irony there as well.
Yeah, and what's interesting too is through the first series and even the first couple issues of this one, Edison's always been kind of the douchey guy. But he doesn't really come off that way in this issue. I guess maybe his relationship with Annie is a little bit different than everybody else, where maybe he doesn't feel like he needs to prove himself, and so he doesn't come off like a douche. And I like that, He's still a douchebag, but it was interesting. It was very interesting. Like, oh God, what's the robot's name? I'm about to find it.
What? In
The
the carriage?
Sebastian. There you go. That's
Yeah,
his name.
Sebastian.
He's so funny. He's like he's a little robot with a cowboy hat.
Yeah.
Oh,
He reminded me of that old character on He-Man, but I tried to look up his name, but I can't.
really?
Yeah. Because there was a sheriff guy, and he had, like, chaps and everything on He-Man,
Oh,
and he had, like, the
interesting.
robots come out, or the robotic arms that had revolvers on it.
Yeah, interesting. I wonder if this guy wears chaps. It looks like he might. There's only like one shot of him sitting down where you can kind of see his legs, and it looks like it might be chaps, but it could just be gun holsters. I don't know. That was awesome. But yeah, so what are we calling the bird people? Because they don't have a name. I mean, they call them anarchists, so I guess we can call them that. But I like bird people better. The bird people.
The bird people.
They just come out of nowhere. They.
Now we got bird nuns in the
Oh yeah,
church.
there's yeah the bird people go to the church dressed up as nuns, and say that God is dead and do their whole anarchist free spirit speech. They lock Annie and Edison in the closet with a bomb. They, of course, capture Jack Johnson and Houdini. They're tied up to horses getting ready to be quartered, which that's got to be a terrible way to die, man.
Yeah.
And that's it. That's kind of how Roosevelt, the issue ends.
Roosevelt surrounded, right?
Yeah, Roosevelt surrounded. He'll be all right, though. He's got Sebastian.
Yeah.
He's got Sebastian. And then in the last panel, I'm not really sure what's happening. There's a bunch of people running towards a fort. It's not a castle. It's got to be a fort, right?
Right, yeah. That's what I was saying. There's like, it had to be a fort because it's Roosevelt's glasses that we're getting the reflection off of, right?
Yep. But
So Monk and him made it to their destination that they were going just in time to lock the gates behind them, I would assume.
I'm trying to figure out if the people that are trying to get into this fort are the bird people or not. Because you can't see their faces, but I assume that they are because it's a bird guy narrating in the background about the revolution. So I'm assuming that's the case.
Right.
But it's kind of hard to tell.
Yeah, I'm zooming in on it, and all I see is like pitchforks and guns and whatnot.
Yeah, yep. It's hard to tell, but I guess I'm sure we'll find that next issue.
Yep.
And obviously, these guys escape, because Houdini is doing his escape artist thing on the cover, so. That's not when he died, right? I think he drowned.
Well, he had the straitjacket on, right? In the tank?
Yeah. He did have it in the tank, but he died in the... He drowned, right? It wasn't in that other escape when he was hanging in the air.
Yeah, right. Yeah, right, okay, correct.
Okay, cool.
Which, side note here, since I'm a nerd, do you see on the cover where there's the pocket watch by his feet?
Yep.
That's awesome, because he used to do it because he could break out of those things in, like, seconds, but there's no drama in that, right?
Sure.
So then he'd always have the stopwatch or a watch there to tick down the seconds.
Yep.
So that's cool. A little minor detail for the cover.
And see, I think that's what really makes this book special, Ronnie. Because it's super fun, but it's so obvious that Adam Glass loves writing all these people.
Right, right, yeah.
I mean, to put in a little detail like that, I mean, he's not doing covers, right?
Right.
So that would be whoever the cover artist for that particular issue, or for issue four is. Right. But even just like within the story itself, there's always little things that kind of differentiate everybody enough that you'd really have to know the characters well in order to make the leap from what we know in real life to be true to something that makes sense in the comic, extrapolating from those real experiences, I guess.
Right.
I think it's really, really obvious in this book that, I mean, the guy's got to do a lot of research for this book, and he loves doing it.
Yeah, I agree. And it just, like, when we first started and we were liking it because it was alternate history, basically.
Yep.
And then we talked about other Rough Riders besides, like, this team. Mm-hmm. And then we got the one-shot Rough Rider Nation that kind of put, and then every decade. And, like, I would so eat that up.
Oh, yeah.
Like, if another book came out or a spinoff of this one or whatever.
Yep.
But also, I don't want it to, like, oversaturate with heroes or villains. Does that make sense?
Because
right now has the perfect balance. But like if you just throw like Cassius Clay in there, which he wouldn't be in this time, but if you put him in there just to put him in there, then it would like saturate it or whatever. But so that balance is awesome.
Yep. Agreed. Let's rate this one up. I guess I'll just stick with what I usually do on this one. 4 out of 5 for me.
Yep. I think I'm going to bump mine up to like a 4.5, though, just because it was such a roller coaster. It was almost like I could see this being a TV show. You know what I mean? Because like in the carriage we had those bad cop moments, but then we also had the comedy type moments, right? And then we kind of had the lovey father-daughter drama, or whatever you want to say for Edison and Annie. And then you had the two, like the badass and the, well, the two badasses, but you know, which is Jack and Houdini. Jack Johnson, not Jack Sutherland, by the way.
No, absolutely.
Yeah, like, and the art's fantastic on it. I mean, there was not really one thing that felt out of place or overused or whatever.
Nope. Great book. Always fun. Always fun. I like that it's as consistent as it is. You know, 'cause some books do they try to write more like TV, I guess, you know, where you have an episode where nothing happens, and then the next one, like, you get all the stuff happening. With Rough Riders, like, that happens within an issue, right? Like, you have some exposition, then a bunch of action, and then some more exposition, and then a bunch of action, then it ends in a cliffhanger. Like, every single one. And I think it's great.
And I wonder if that's because he writes TV.
That makes sense. Yeah, it makes total sense.
So, like, he would. I mean, obviously, it's going to be different because it's TV versus, you know, a different form of art, but it has to be easier transition that way than the other way, I would assume. But maybe if we get to talk to him sometime, we can ask him that.
We sure will. We need to hop on
Joe, hop on that.
that. Next up, we'll be talking about Shipwreck Number 4. This is written by Warren Ellis, my favorite. You're reading Wildstorm, right? Oh, God, it's so good. Art by Phil Hester, who's amazing.
Friend of the show.
Friend of the show, Phil Hester. Mark Engler on colors, Marshall Dillon on letters. You know, Ronnie, there's something about shipwreck, right? We're like, how do you even describe shipwreck to anybody? Right, so we're 4 issues in now, right? The book was on a short hiatus. I think it was off for like 2 months, between issue 3 and 4. It's a 6-issue mini, so you would think that by issue 4 there would be some more answers. And don't get me wrong, there were answers here, because we finally see the launch of the Janus, the ship that took him to this alternate Earth. We finally get to see that, but it doesn't explain me to anything to me. You know,
Well,
we
we get to see the guy's name, the main bad guy that leaves them there at the end.
Yes. He was on the ship, and he ejected once they get to this alternate Earth, which, to me, I mean, obviously he was there previously on our Earth, and he had to have, I would assume, a lot to do with the project itself, right? Like the alternate reality hopping thing, because when he's walking around and he meets this girl who's launching rockets into the black holes in the sky, and trying to figure out, you know, why they keep coming back when they're not supposed to. She says that they've been in this reality, they've been launching ships across worlds since God was a baby, right? Which raises a lot more questions about where the hell he is, and it really makes me think that maybe he just actually is dead, and not necessarily in an alternate Earth. Or I don't know, maybe this alternate Earth is where gods come from. But some of that, I might be jaded. I'm reading American Gods right now, because I want to watch the show, but I want to read the book before. And so maybe some of that is jading me a little bit to think that. But I'm seeing some common themes between that story and this. And it has me curious, but again, there's no answers.
Yeah.
No answers at all. Yeah. There's a really weird scene where he tries to get some snacks at the vending machine, and they have rabbit drink, blue cave meat, and yes, it's dog, which is hilarious. but what's that got to do with the story, you know?
Right.
But don't get me wrong, I'm not poo-pooing on the book at all. I just, it's so, like, for me at least, and, you know, I'm sure some people will disagree, but Phil Hester's art in this book is just, like, awe-inspiring, man. I don't know what it is about it that just makes it so special to look at. And there's so little words in here that you're forced to analyze every panel.
Yep. It gives the art room to breathe and tell the story instead of with words.
Absolutely. And we got to see some of the original pages for Shipwreck at C2E2.
Yeah.
And they're even more beautiful in person.
Yeah.
In black and white.
In black and white, right. Yeah.
In black and white. So yeah, really, really interesting stuff here. Again, I have no idea what's happening. There's got to be something relating to, I don't even know how to explain it, Ronnie. Because right after that snack scene, he's watching the TV, and they show this guy with this skull mask thing that he puts on, and at the bottom of the panel it says "Real History."
Right.
Like, what does that
mean? Well, see, I guess I can see it now that he's actually putting it on.
Yes.
Because I was wondering if he was, like, pulling his face off and he's actually an alien under his human skin. But
oh, gotcha.
I guess he's holding it like he's actually putting a mask on.
Yes, 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 yes. Well, I mean, that whole page is obviously political satire.
Right.
Right. As to what's happening now in the U.S.
Right.
But I want to know how that relates to the story.
Right.
And I think part of the reason I like this book as much as I do is because I don't know what the hell's happening, but it intrigues me.
Right. Right.
A lot of books, like, if you can't get into a story, you don't know what's happening, you're kind of like, I'm kind of done with this, right? Like, it's going nowhere.
You check out.
Yeah, you check out. But there's something about the way this is done that I don't have that at all.
Yeah.
And part of me makes me wish that this book was more than 6 issues, because I think the story of this world would take, I don't know, 100 issues to tell. But, you know, I'm sure that's not possible. I don't know how good sales are on this, but I'm sure it's fairly low. And you know, Ellis is a history with his books, and he's really devoted to the Wallstrom stuff now. So,
So has he already checked out?
I don't know. I don't think he's checked. No, I don't think he's checked out of this. I think with a passion project like this for somebody, it'd be kind of hard to do.
No, because this. You know what this reminds me of? Mm-hmm. Like Dr. Sleepless.
Totally like Dr. Sleepless. Absolutely.
Because I loved that book when it came out, and I still love that book. But I've read it probably like 10 times, and I probably can't tell you the exactly everything that went to hell on in that book.
No, I agree. I think they just reissued that in trade like a few weeks ago. There's a new trade for it. Because Avatar was doing a 50% off sale.
Okay.
Yeah, I think like the week before C2E2, they had a 50% off sale. It's Dr. Sleepless, totally, totally. And you're not the only one, by the way, because I've heard that from a lot of people that really like Dr. Sleepless that have no idea what the hell happened to Dr. Sleepless.
Right, yeah.
So I'm totally with you, man.
There is one question on this book that I'd like answered in the 6 issues that come out.
Sure.
That probably has nothing to do with the overall story.
Okay.
And it might be a stupid question that I want answered.
Yes.
But I want to know why his arm or hand is a different color. Is the orange color.
Oh, interesting.
Because, like, one time, like the left one
Yeah.
is wrapped, and then the right one is like the orange color.
Yep.
Always.
Yep.
So, I mean, like I said, that's just another question to add to the book, but like, I don't know if you give it much thought or think about it or whatever, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I'd noticed it, but I hadn't thought about it. But now that you say that, it seems even more obvious in this issue because there's so much orange.
Right.
Huh.
Like, you can't really tell, like, when he's looking up at the sun. I
Yeah,
don't know.
right.
Yeah, I don't know if you got it
Yeah,
because
yeah,
it
yeah.
just looks like a regular flesh colored hand, but then when you get down to the bottom of that page, then you can tell when he's has his other hand up that, you know, that one's the wrapped one, so.
Right. There is some interesting stuff, and you know, I hadn't realized that the villain was this guy, Isham.
Yeah.
And now, looking back on it, it raises a few more questions for me. The whole scene right before they launch, where he's like, "Are you ready for the big moment, Dr. Shipwreck?" He's like, "Our big moment, surely." And he's like, "No, this is your baby. I'm just along for the ride."
Right.
But then it kind of just focuses on Isham's face, and he's got this like weird, like creepo dude look, you know? Makes me wonder, like, how much more there is to the story. Like, do you feel like we're gonna get a solid resolution to all the questions in the next two issues? Yeah, I don't think so either.
No, I think we'll get enough to maybe put a loose bow on it, but it's not going to be a tightly knit bow at the end of
Yeah,
it.
yep.
Which is always good because that means that it could go on hiatus, you know, for a little bit and then come back.
Yeah, I
But
guess you're right.
I don't think that all the questions are going to be answered though.
Yep. Anyways, cool issue. Art is a 30 out of 5 for me.
Yep, agreed.
Story maybe a little bit lower just because I want to know what the hell is happening, all right? That's what I want to
Yeah.
know. I want to know what the hell's happening. Now I'll just rate it up. I'm going to give it, it's so tough. I'm going to give it a 4 because the art is so good.
Yeah, that's what I was debating between a 3.5 and a
Yep,
four,
yep.
but I think Phil's art and the tones, the colors that he uses, and the details, I think pushes it to a four as well.
Yep. Agreed. It's time to move on.
Move
Dear
on.
to Dear Martha.
Move on to the end.
Next up, a brand new number one. I'm gonna go ahead and say it outright before we even start talking about it. Joe, I know you listen. I apologize. I know it's only one issue. It might take a few.
Oh, I know where you're going with this, and
But
you're going to get banned.
this might be my favorite Aftershock title right now. And I'm talking about Pestilence number one. Came out, what, last week, I think?
Yes.
Written by Frank Thierry, art by Oleg Okunev. There's Rob the Schwag.
Yep.
Schwager is on
Swaggy
colors.
P.
Shaggy P is
Yep.
on colors. And Marshall Dillon on letters. Man, Marshall Dillon's busy.
Yeah, he is.
God. Pestilence. So I mean I'll use the recap from the solicits. What if the Black Plague wasn't really a disease that killed people, but if it was a zombie outbreak? And there's a lot of boobs in here.
There is.
There's some boobage.
But there's no penises because it's Aftershock and not Image.
Oh man. So the book centers on, oh God, what are they called? The Fiat Lux, which I took Latin a very long time ago. My Latin is very rusty, but I think it would translate to something like Faith in the Light.
Yes, that is correct. I looked it up.
Did you?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, see, it helps that I took a bunch of Romance languages too, so a lot of that Latin stayed in my head. They're it's not a sect. Here we go. They call it the Assassin's Arm of the Church. I guess that makes more sense.
Yeah.
There's five guys. Roderick Helms is the main guy. He's he was in the Crusades previously. Mm-hmm. Jeffrey is like the muscle of the group.
Yep.
Giovanni is my favorite. He's like a ninja.
Yep. He's the chief assassin.
Chief assassin. James, the jester.
Yeah.
Abel, who I thought was a woman. And it might still be a woman, but they say it's a young man.
Yeah.
And then William Moore is like the Friar Tuck of the group.
He's the brains.
Yeah.
The strategist, I guess.
Yes. So basically, the Fiat Lux, whenever the church needs something handled, they call upon these guys to go and take care of it. And as the book opens up, they go, where is it? Do they say?
It just says Holy Land.
Yeah, it just says the Holy Land, right. So they're in Jerusalem somewhere, is my assumption. Mm-hmm. And there's a guy that apparently just decided to go there with a bunch of his men and take over the city. And, again, there's a lot of boobage.
Yep.
They pretty much do whatever they want. They kill whoever they want. They.
He said that he was from the church, right?
Yes.
He took it over proclaiming it was for the church.
Proclaiming it was for the church, which, I mean, this happened a bit during the Crusades.
Right.
There would be people that had land and money and men that would just go and use the Crusades as kind of a way to... rape women and take gold.
Yep.
So this was kind of commonplace, and that's what this guy does.
Like and land pirates, basically.
Absolutely. So this guy does whatever the hell he wants.
and whoever
obviously. He wants. Women apparently are not allowed to wear clothes in his castle. And the church finds out, and they send the Fiat Lux to go handle this guy. And this is why Giovanni's my favorite, because he's like a freaking ninja dressed up as a clown jester.
Yeah.
And it was amazing.
Yep. That's the whole thing, is like, it's almost like that Armageddon scene where the whole group's walking in there like badasses, you know?
Yep.
And then, of course, you got the fat guy that took over the city that thinks he's the badass.
Yep.
And then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, Giovanni just dunk right in the head and done deal.
And then, of course, you know, they tell do they give him a name for this guy? The fat guy? Roderick. Roderick's the main guy.
Yeah.
Oh, God. That's his name. I thought they said his name.
I thought so, too.
All right, doesn't matter. Anyway, so this guy tries to kill Roderick, and that's when Giovanni comes in, slits his throat, and the guy's men are about to kill the Fiat, and Roderick's like, you kind of don't want to do that. The church sent us. The army's right outside. Your bodyguards suck. I'm not going to kill you today, but you might die tomorrow. Have a good day.
Yeah.
That's pretty much how it goes.
Sir Archibald, you fat, ugly bastard. that's his name. Quote, unquote.
There you go. So, super interesting beginning. Definitely not for children.
Yeah.
Again, there's...
Not for Paul.
It's definitely not for Paul. There's no privates... But there's a lot of boobage. There's a lot of sex scenes. There's a lot of intestines being ripped out of people, torture stuff. At least in the first few pages.
You didn't even talk about the last part.
What last part? I'm not even there yet.
Oh. I thought you were wrapping it up.
No,
I
was like, you didn't talk about the last part. No, because I haven't even talked about what happens.
No, that's why.
Yeah, so after they take care of these guys, they're going to go back to the Vatican after killing this guy. And as they're walking through the desert, a horse comes up with a rider, and the rider's hooded. And, I mean, during this whole thing, you get a little bit of who everybody is.
Right.
By the way, this is where I got that I think Abel is a woman. Because it says, as does I hate to say, young Abel, I am the only member of the Fiat Lux who knows the secret that hunts him so. A secret I fear may ultimately be his undoing.
Well, maybe he's gay.
I mean, he might be gay. It just might be the way the artist drew him to try to make him a young man. But to me, it's the face of a woman. Just saying.
Well, he looks pissed off all the time.
He does.
So maybe he isn't as good-hearted and loyal as perceived to be.
Very possible. Very possible. All right, so they come up on this rider who's hooded and doesn't say anything. They try to get the guy's attention. Nothing. The guy's a freaking zombie. And he bites one of the Fiat, and they end up killing the guy. There's a letter there written in secret ink, which apparently is lemon juice. I didn't know this, you know? I didn't know you could do secret messages with lemon juice.
But that's a thing.
So they put the letter to fire, and that brings out the writing. And the letter is for the Fiat, addressed to them, to Roderick, and telling them, kind of, be careful coming home, because hell on earth is here.
Yep.
And they cut to the Vatican, and there's zombies all over the place. Did you ever see World War Z?
Yeah.
It's like that scene in Jerusalem when the zombies are trying to climb the wall.
Yep, yeah.
And they're just all over the place. Yeah, it's like that scene. And I was like, yes!
Yeah.
Give me more zombies. That's not the terrible Walking Dead comic.
You watch your mouth. Dude, Aftershock is knocking it out of the park with number ones.
I'm telling you, dude.
Because last week we had World Reader, last episode.
Yep. There's a new issue out, which we're not going to talk about today.
Right.
But, knocked it out.
And then we have this one.
Yep.
Which really, since we saw the synopsis for it, I know you and I particularly were like, I was afraid that this wouldn't live up to our hype. But it exceeded it.
I think it above and beyond exceeded it.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally.
Because it actually has, like, real-world places.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of like the alt history type stuff that Rough Riders does.
Yep.
And then, yeah. And the art is amazing.
Yeah, I don't know where this artist came from. I didn't look him up, and I should have.
Mm-hmm.
I love the art through the entire thing. There's some panels that are very 90s looking.
Yeah.
Particularly the scene in the Holy Land, right before they kill that guy.
I thought that whole part with the naked women and all that was like really 90s style.
Yeah. Yep. Definitely. but not in a bad way either. And I really liked it though, because a lot of the art reminded me of really, really early Umberto Ramos. What was the book he did? Crimson, I think it was called. I think it came out for Image. It was about a vampire. It reminded me a little bit of that. What was the other book? Let me look this up while we're doing this. There's a book called Battle Chasers also, which I think they're relaunching. Now they just released a video game. They kickstarted a video game.
Oh, okay.
Joe Madureira, that's who did it.
Yeah.
It was published 1998 to 2001. Art Adam Warren and Joe Madureira. Yeah. But it had that vibe for me. And that stuff was some of my favorite comics that I was reading at the time anyway, so
yeah.
Really interesting. Cliffhanger was the imprint. It was under Wildstorm at that time. They had three books. I can't remember the third one. It was Crimson, Battle Chasers, and one more. But, yeah, I loved it. It was freaking awesome.
Yeah.
Freaking awesome.
Yeah. And, like, their number ones are just, like, keep coming.
Yeah, what's coming up? Normals is coming up.
We got Baby Teeth coming up first, right?
I thought Normals was... Yeah, I think Normals is this month, and then Baby Teeth is next month.
And then Jimmy's Bastards is the month after that, right? Yep,
then Jimmy's Bastards.
Or is that June? Jimmy's Bastard is the Wednesday before Father's Day, so...
Okay. Let's see, on sale in June.
Yep.
Yeah, Baby Teeth is in June. Jimmy's Bastards is also in June. Yeah, I think so, Jimmy's Bastards is first, because I think Baby Teeth might be at the end of the month.
Okay.
And I think that's it, right? Nothing else new has been announced yet.
Well, the Colin Bunn's book was announced, but it isn't solicited for a while.
Right.
Yeah. But dude, they're just knocking them out of the park with these things, because all of those have high hope and potential.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm digging each concept of the story. Like, with Jimmy's Bastards, wasn't there an Image book like Domino 7 or Domino 5?
Yeah, that sounds vaguely familiar.
Where he was a superhero and he had kids all over there. That had superpowers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the description for Jimmy's Bastards seemed very familiar, but I couldn't place what the book was. By the way, Unholy Grail is in July.
Okay.
Yeah, I just looked it up.
Awesome. Because that's King Arthur, right?
Yep, the evil King Arthur and Merlin.
Yeah. So that should be fantastic, too.
Dig that. July 5th. Oh, great. It's a holiday weekend.
Yeah.
Mm.
More time to read.
Mm.
Maybe you'll be caught up by then.
I'm still so far behind, dude. I was looking at my list today. I'm back to like 4 weeks again.
Yeah.
It's bad. But let's rate up Pestilence. I'll let you go first this time.
This is the one that I'm giving a 5 out of 5 for.
For sure.
For the writing, the action, and it's pretty much what you want a number one to be.
Yep.
And it exceeds that.
You know what's interesting, too? For a first issue, and considering how many different characters there are, mm-hmm. every character is really well fleshed out.
Yep. Agreed.
I was trying to think, what was that book? Green... Oh, God. I think it's an Image book.
Green Valley.
Cause, I mean, part of that is similar, right? Like the way it starts.
Yeah.
Right. Obviously, this goes in a completely different direction. But you also have like that group of people that, you know, kind of grew up together, fighting for the church, killing, you know, people that shouldn't be doing stuff in the name of the church.
Right.
But even that cast didn't feel as well fleshed out for a couple of issues.
Right. Agreed.
As much as the guys in Pestilence did.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, really cool. I'm looking forward to hear reaction from others on this book.
Right.
And I know a lot of people do DCBS, so it takes a little while.
Rob just tweeted us.
Yeah, Rob tweeted at us, said, what was it that he said? What a fantastic issue. Yeah. I think he does his weekly. I think he's doing weekly boxes.
Yeah, he can't wait.
Dude, he gets more than you and I get.
I know. He's like, we talked about that offline.
Yeah.
And he was like, I think you're second only to Mike. And I was like, no. I think Martin and I are tied, or maybe one, two books apart. But I think you got us by like 10 to 20.
Oh, yeah. He gets a lot. I was doing so well, too. I was down to like 20-something 30 books sometimes, and that just went to shit. I'm like back at like 70 books, I think.
I've never been that low since like 99. And then like something new comes out and you're like, oh, and then yeah.
Yeah. Well, see, that's why it's good to be friends with Rob and Mike, though.
Yeah.
Because they get so many books that if I forget to get something, I'm just like, oh, yeah.
Yep.
I'll just wait to see what they got.
Exactly.
And then I go get it. Like Monica.
Yeah.
That had a lot of penis in it.
And it wasn't Image.
It was not Image. It was really good, though. The art is beautiful. Gillian March art. But, oh, yeah. Pestilence. I'm so excited for this book, dude. I was really stoked about it, but you know, zombies can be hard to do because it's really easy to go cheesy. You know what I mean?
Yep.
But not this.
Yep.
Not this. I was very, very impressed.
Before we wrap this up, I have a question for you.
Uh-oh.
And then a question for our listeners that we got asked at C2E2 by Joe.
Uh-oh.
If we had somebody, a writer or artist, to write or draw for Aftershock, who would you pick?
Bro, they're already there.
Warren Ellis. And Phil Hester. Okay. I was just... Because he asked us, and asked us for suggestions.
Sure.
So...
Yeah, I mean, for somebody that's not currently there, I mean, I don't know, man. That's really tough. Because, like, there's guys that I really like, but only when they're doing their own stuff. Jeff Lemire, for example, right? I really like Lemire's.
That would be my answer.
Yeah, I like his indie stuff. Mm-hmm. I don't like his Big Two stuff. Animal Man was good, but... like the X-Men stuff was not good. Moon Knight was good. Old Man Logan was good. What else? Didn't he do Swamp Thing?
Snyder did Swamp Thing, right?
Yeah, I know Snyder did Swamp Thing, but I think Lemire might have. No, you know what it was?
He did Teen Titans Year One.
Yeah, there was that crossover issue with Swamp Thing and Animal Man. He did. That's what it was.
Right.
I think Matt Kent did some Swamp Thing. But, you know, like, he's doing Royal City. He's doing really well with that. He's got The Sender. What's the other one that he's doing? I can't remember. And then, like, Matt Kinn, I mean, he does his own stuff, but he does so much for Valiant. I don't even know if he's got time for yet another book. You see what I mean?
Right.
I would like to see maybe some... I know Aftershock's thing is getting big-name writers or artists on a book.
Mm-hmm.
But I wouldn't mind seeing some lesser known guys. So this is a bad example because Marvel was smart and picked him up. But Mark Rosenberg, when he was doing the Black Mass stuff.
Right.
Like his Black Mass stuff was really freaking good.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And that's why Marvel really picked good him too. Up. Yeah. Well, that's canceled now.
Well, everything's going to be canceled because it's going to be rebooted. But
anyway, he's a really good writer. And he's super cool to talk to, by the way.
Yeah.
Like, if you ever chat with him on Twitter, he will talk up a storm.
Yep.
Just for the record.
Yep.
I would love to see more guys like that. But again, like, Aftershock is trying to do something a little bit different.
Right.
In terms of a big-name writer, I mean, you can never go wrong with Rucka. And now that he's leaving Wonder Woman... Maybe he's going to have a little more time. I don't know. Maybe not because he's doing TV. You know, TV keeps him busy. He's going to be doing... I think they're coming back with Black Magic again.
Yeah.
So maybe he doesn't have time. But that'd be interesting. Rucka, I wouldn't mind that. Oh, God. What's his name that does Astro City?
I had it until you asked me.
God, dude, Astro City is the best book that nobody reads. Kurt Busiek.
Yes.
I mean, dude, that book's been through so many publishers.
What about Charles Soule?
You know, I don't know. That's tough, man, because he does so much Marvel stuff. And I don't like his Marvel stuff. That it really jades me sometimes. Like, well, I'm the same.
I was just curious.
I'm the same way with Cullen Bunn, right?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's like, just like his indie stuff, like Jeff Lemire, even.
Yeah.
Like, the indie stuff is what we enjoy the most out of certain writers.
Sure. Well, I mean, and I would have said Cullen Bunn, and you know that's coming out because Unholy Grail.
Right.
So. And I think out of everybody, like, that's a really good fit for what Aftershock's doing. I'm trying to think who's not doing a whole lot now that I would want to see do something. Like, Alan Moore Quick Comics again.
Yeah.
That'd be interesting, but I don't know, like, the logistics of that.
What about Grant Morrison? For you, I'm saying, because... He's like my Jeff Johns.
Yeah, I could see that. I could see that. But I mean, like, has he done...
Like, he hasn't done anything for a while, has he?
Yeah, I don't know. He hasn't done anything in a while. I mean, I'm trying to think the last book he did. It might have been Batman and Robin, right?
Right, yeah.
And he's the editor-in-chief of Heavy Metal now, if I'm not mistaken. But... Like, that book's almost bankrupt.
Yeah.
Like, all their creators are leaving, so I don't know, like, what his next step was going to be. Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't mind seeing him. Maybe, I don't know, man, it's so hard.
I know. I put you on the spot.
No, I know. I was trying to think, like, I'm reading American Gods, and Paul and I were just talking about Sandman tonight. I wouldn't mind seeing Gaiman, but I think Gaiman's really happy just writing his books right now.
Yeah.
The novels.
Yeah.
They all do really well for him.
Right.
So I don't know if he'd be interested in going back to comics. And I'm trying to think, like, an artist that I would want to see. And I can't really think of many. Maybe, like, Sean Murphy. I wouldn't mind seeing more Sean Murphy.
Yeah. More Sean Murphy is always a good thing.
Yeah, you can never go wrong with Sean Murphy.
Yeah.
Is he still doing Tokyo Ghost, or is that done?
I think it's done.
Yeah.
He's getting ready to do that new Batman book, though.
Oh, that's right.
Or no, he's doing the last arc of All-Star Batman, but yeah, he also has the solo one coming out too.
Yeah. Is that the dark whatever?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. That'll be good, just if him doing it.
Yeah.
Maybe I'll read All-Star Batman again.
So if anybody out there has better suggestions than us, tweet us at Tag Joe.
Yeah,
tell
for sure.
On the Facebook page.
Did we post this on the Facebook page yet?
The question?
Yeah.
No.
Okay.
No.
So after I post the episode, we can start a discussion on the Facebook page as well.
Yep.
I think that'll be interesting to see what everybody comes up with. Because everybody's got people they like.
Right.
I'm curious.
And our Facebook group is the best group that... One of the best groups that we're in.
This is true.
Because there's no whining, complaining...
Nope.
Trolling.
Nope.
Just everybody has an actual civil, decent discussion.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Even if you don't like something, that's okay, because we'll just talk about it like civil human beings.
If you don't like it, too bad. Go away.
No, well, that's what I'm saying. Is like, I've seen people that haven't liked something, but they gave logical and actual feelings of why they don't like it instead of generic reasons.
Yep. No, I gotcha.
As to where we see that with other groups.
That's why I don't stay in those groups. I leave.
Or kick them out.
Or kick them out if I run the group. I think it's going to wrap it up.
Yep.
That is going to wrap it up.
Let's kick us out of here.
We're going to kick ourselves out of here. We're going to rough ride it away. You've been listening to the Aftershock Central Podcast with Ronnie and Martin at Rumbar316, at Geekvine, at Aftershock Pod. and facebook.com/groups/aftershockcomicfans.
And if you want to make fun of Jack, it's at Jack Sutherland. It's okay if you do.
If he can hear you, I think Hydra deleted Twitter from
yeah.
So that might not be possible.
Now it's called something else.
Thanks for listening, and we'll catch you next week.
So to the next time you hear this dog rhyme, try to keep your mind on getting prime. Stop, drop, shut them down, open up shop. Talk is cheap, motherfucker.